So, we have rather a small gathering to discuss more than half the general fund budget, but that's the way it is. And I confess, I didn't realize the mayor was sick, so I don't think I've ever presided over a budget work session. So, Andrew, tell me if I'm missing any formalities. But I was kind of assuming I'd turn it over to you to introduce this session, and then we turn it over to Chief O'Day.
Yes, and I have no introductory remarks for today, and so we will go straight to the police bureau.
All right, is this a part where I just thank you guys for granting all our requests, and we're good to go? All right, I'll start off. I'll follow the format kind of laid out for us. First section, really looking at our significant budget issues that are going to impact our bureau over the next 5 years or so. Our number one issue is going to be around DOJ compliance as far as it impacts our budget. We know from our neighbors to the north in Seattle, they've been spending literally millions of dollars around their Department of Justice settlement. You know, we're looking at you know, improving our legitimacy, improving our relationship with the community. We know you know, some of the costs and some of the positions that we need to help work towards that agreement. And there's some that we don't know. We don't know the work right now that the COCAL and the COAB, their ongoing processes, what that's going to translate into dollar-wise as they decide what is, you know, the right amount and the right style of community engagement. And when they have decided when we have substantial compliance on each of those individual items in that 77-page document. Another significant budget issue for us over the next several years is going to be our adequacy in staffing. In the last 15 years or so, we've lost approximately 120 sworn positions. In the budget year before last, we had lost about 55 positions, 50 of those being sworn. And that was where we really, really started noticing an impact to our ability to police. The budget note last year required us to have an outside staffing study come in and take a look at the bureau. That staffing study is all but done, and it'll be here next month before all of you. But we know it'll be showing that that the Bureau is lean, and they are recommending the addition of positions. The next 3 years for the Police Bureau are going to be coinciding with pretty high retirement eligible levels, where folks will be having 25, 26 years on, and we're anticipating having to hire quite a bit in these next 3 years around that. So really, the conversation affecting the Police Bureau as far as staffing kind of needs to be, you know, what is the right size for the Police Bureau based around the Department of Justice decisions, the crime levels, and community expectations for us. Another budget issue is going to be changing crime. With technology and fraud and computers, there is a whole new venue of crime that is opening up. Each of these events, these fraud events, you know, literally can cost thousands and thousands of dollars. You know, in cumulative, their impact is quite a bit. To combat this different type of crime really requires very specialized training and positions to be able to do that. Another budget issue for the next several years is going to be changing technology for the Police Bureau, looking at things like the body cameras, our new records management system, even smartphones to make ourselves more efficient. So we have to look at both the cost of those items, their maintenance costs, the storage of information costs, and the staffing and replacement for those. Lastly on my list, thinking about the next several years, is going to be looking at kind of strengthening the police and public relationships. This is an issue that is true for my profession, both nationwide and here. And so, as we move forward, what is that going to look like? Clearly, it's going to be probably more bodies out of cars. You know, looking at different things like the success of our foot patrol that we've had, looking at different positions, increasing the need for, you know, cultural community liaisons. So those are the kind of list of significant budget issues for us to be thinking about that are going to impact us in the next several years. And so so this budget request that I have this year, right, what does it do? It is the ads that I'm asking for really address just our critical needs. These are the needs that if we don't have these positions, are going to cause us to fail, and in particular around the DOJ settlement agreement where we can't fail. So these ones, you know, I've got, you know, willing to have offset with resources that, you know, I need them so bad that I really don't even have these to spare, but they're critical positions, and I would need to do without those to get these new positions. I'll be cutting these, you know, the offset cuts are really coming from undersourced core functions already. You won't see any, you know, sacred cow offsets. I think those conversations are never helpful. And our offsets are really just structured around trying to spread the damage around as best we can, and not that we feel like we've got these positions to spare. What this budget request does not do, though, is address some other substantial needs that we need to be thinking about for the police bureau, you know, going forward. These are needs to me that are really important, but they don't supersede the need to me to be able to offset with other cuts from core functions that we have to do. So these are things like having an investigative analyst for our gangs. You know, our gang shootings are up, you know, approximately 2.5 or 3 times what they were last year. You know, and a position like that can really help us connect the dots and work better. You know, it doesn't include things like an investigative analyst for detectives that allow us to work smarter with limited resources. It doesn't include background investigators, which I know I need going forward as we're continuing to know we're going to hire a bunch more in the next 3 years. It doesn't include positions for computer crimes and with that problem that I just talked to you about there. So these ads that I'm talking about, and outside of the revenue back positions, because I'll have some revenue back positions that I'll talk to, are really around DOJ-related needs. And so looking at our key decision packages, one of the things that I'm asking for is 6 analyst positions, all related to DOJ compliance. 4 of those based out of Strategic Services Division and 2 around our Professional Standards Division. These analyst positions are a stops data analyst to dive deep into our substantial stops data that we've been collecting for years. There is a COCL COAB analyst position. There is a community engagement and outreach analyst position, a region analyst position, and then 2 analyst positions to work with the force inspector in the Professional Standards Division. The Department of Justice agreement requires substantial data gathering and reporting for us. And that's why these positions are critical for us to be able to gather, interpret that data, and pass that on to the Department of Justice.
So are those sworn positions or non-sworn?
Those positions are all non-sworn positions. And so the offsets that we've looked at, again, they're not places that I feel like we've got fat to give, but the intent is to spread that around to minimize as best as possible the impact to the police bureau. And so the offsets for those analyst positions are our officer from DVD, an officer from the traffic division, an officer from the gang enforcement division, 2 officers from patrol, and a record specialist position where we required to have offsets to have those. The next ask that I have in our budget is around positions to support our body-worn camera program. This is a decision that is our goal here was to help try to get ahead on this instead of chasing and being and trying to catch up with the body-worn camera. There's legislation going on that still needs to be resolved before we're ready to be operational on body cameras. There's collective bargaining agreement work to be done that we're in the process of. And so this conversation is really around the timing for those positions so that as soon as we're able to, we'll be able to implement the body-worn camera program. So in that sense, for that set of positions there, you know, I feel there's probably some flexibility on the timing on that decision. The offsets that we have proposed to support that would be 2 detectives from our property crimes investigations. We have 3 revenue-backed decisions in our process. One is the region sustainment sustainment team. It's three positions in that. It's a program manager, an analyst, and a record specialist. Those will all be paid for by all the partner agencies that contribute to the system. There's a transit division request for two officers and one analyst there to help both support the Orange Line expansion and the analyst to help them do better, smarter work. And then a revenue-backed property evidence position whose money will be offset by selling the surplus and abandoned property that are in place there. Next thing I'll look at is, looking at our budget and linking it to both the mayor's priorities and the bureau priorities. So the mayor's priorities around equity and opportunity, emergency preparedness, and complete communities. Those align with the priorities that I've been laying out for the bureau since I got there around, community engagement, around diversifying the bureau, diversifying bureau leadership, increasing our knowledge and action around equity, improving our communication and collaboration, and being fiscally responsible. So looking at the mayor's priority of equity and opportunity, this budget continues the funding that we have for our equity and diversity program manager. It supports the stops data analyst and really all of the Department of Justice funding positions, in my mind, are an investment both in equity and in community engagement. The budget supports our continuing development of our equity and diversity strategic plan. And then the Bureau is also doing a lot, beyond the specifics in the budget around equity and diversity. I think, one of the biggest factors is the direction you get from the Bureau Director. I've been very clear on that from the start. We've just replaced our personnel division with another person very supportive of the direction that we're going. Looking at the emergency preparedness function, this budget also supports continuing our folks in our emergency management unit. There is money in there to replace our emergency supplies that have shelf life, like ballistic shields, gas mask filters. And then again, this is another area where we're doing work outside the budget as well. In my restructure of the Bureau, I've moved the emergency management unit from the Strategic Services Division, where I never thought was a good fit, to the Operations Branch. Looking at Mayor's priority around complete communities, I think that is a large part of what all the Bureau does. Having keeping the peace, keeping the community safe, keeping people feeling safe, improving our relationship with the community. And again, all that Department of Justice investment, I think, is an investment in community engagement and in equity. And again, outside budget specifics, we're continuing to look at how can we continue to be improve in that way without just spending new money. So we're piloting right now our sector policing to continue the success we had with the walking beats downtown and try and do that way in a cost, not even just a cost neutral, but a cost savings model from how we were able to do that last summer. Taking a look at how does this measure up with our key performance measures? So the Bureau has several key performance measures. One of the first ones we have is a percentage of new employees hired by the Bureau that are comprised of minorities. We have a percentage of total Portland police officer arrests in which there's a use of force. Another one of our measures are a percentage of Department of Justice agreement action items completed. Another measure, and this has been a measure for a while, number of Part 1 person crimes per 1,000 residents. And that number has stayed, relatively stable. Percentage of residents who feel safe walking alone in their neighborhood, that's another one that has been a historical performance measure. And then average travel time to high priority calls in minutes, that is another historical performance measure. One of our challenges that we're looking at in performance measures, we've got a lot of focused effort around community engagement, particularly community engagement in communities of color. These numbers are small, so you look at maybe a general satisfaction survey, might only rise up just a bit where maybe you're substantially doing well, but the number there compared with the entire number of folks surveyed, you know, that kind of survey might not give you a real indication of if you're being successful or not. But within that challenge, we're hopeful, really looking back at that DOJ compliance piece. There's a lot of community engagement benchmarks in there, and looking at, you know, when the COCAL decides if we've made substantial compliance in those, looking for a relationship there between that and more successful community engagement. With that, I'll turn it over to Lucey. I'll have a few minutes. Thank you, sir.
Hello, councilors and everybody. Thank you for the opportunity. I serve the board, the budgeting for the Portland Police, and we look at it similar cities that what the budget they have, and I didn't see, actually Portland most of the time we're actually below that level. What I see in this new budget and the new chief also is the outreach of the community, which is very important because most of the issues we deal with after they get boiled out. And by having that outreach and dealing with the community and not only show up after a 911 call is very important for the community member. Another thing that I really have my support is also the use of the body cameras, because basically what creates an environment that can be always visible and would take any suspicious of what community members can say about events that occur. With that one, so it would create an environment that's open and visible at all the time. Also, the prevention would gauge the community before anything happens inside the community. So it's not an innuendo and suspicious created before that. With that said, I will stop my input for the community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions?
I had a question. So on the matrix span of control report, is the expectation that we're going to get that back in time for it to impact the budget cycle this year?
Yeah, and just to clarify, the matrix was a whole staffing study. We had a previous in-house city span of control study prior to matrix, and we will have that next month. So we'll have, I believe it's got a date certain for, I want to say about the 8th of April for being back here.
So just as a quick follow-up. So I understand that there has been a sort of a preliminary, and some people may have seen that, but I'm wondering how that would affect the CBO's recommendations, since if there are actions in that could be taken based on span of control adjustments, that could be a place that some of the offsets could come from?
Yeah, I don't want to get out sort of ahead of the release. There is a task force that's been working on it, so there have been some drafts. But, you know, I think that's something that the mayor and council could look at after they hear the presentation from the chief. You know, I think what you're going to, you know, the study's going to both, it is looking at sort of those span of control issues and also looking at appropriate levels of staffing.
Right.
So, I mean, I think you're going to see, you know, I'm not sure it would be all savings that is going to come out of the report. I think there's going to be some asks as well.
Okay.
I think integrating the timing is going to be challenging given this budget cycle where we are. But certainly that's going to be a decision that you know, council can hear that report and then sort of figure out whether there's the ability to address any of the issues now or whether it'll need to wait for a future
for
budget.
Next year. Yeah. It just seemed like it might be a significant input into this process.
Yeah. Am I on? Yep. Chief, you mentioned that there'd be a number of retirements coming up over the next 3 years, I believe. Do you have an idea how many there might be on an annual basis? And also, do you have any problems recruiting new recruits to fill those places, at least you know, on the force?
Yes, I don't have the numbers with me right now, but I have them sitting on my desk for the next several years. And that 15, 16, 17 are all years that coincide with big hiring groups back 25, 26 years ago for us. The other challenge we're dealing with in kind of our starting and stopping of hiring based on the cuts we had to take the year before, we're in a position now where we're restarting hiring, but we don't have folks that are ending probation for quite some time. It'll be August will be the next time we have folks ending probation, which means they can go out, fill districts, be by themselves, or act as a tenured officer. And so in August, we'll have, I believe, 10 coming off of probation then. So our challenge right now is trying to recruit when our staffing levels of officers who can work the street by themselves is really at its bare minimum, yet I need to be recruiting people and doing their backgrounds. So I'm having to borrow people to do backgrounds right now, as well as help with our recruiting efforts.
One more question. With tight, not controls, but a limited number of law enforcement officers, are you faced with having to ask for overtime in order to fill in slots that are caused by vacations, caused by illness, by special assignments? I'm trying to figure out, what's the handle on overtime? Is it something that's substantial?
We're hiring a fair amount of overtime right now, but we also, because of our vacancies and beginning to rehire, have some salary savings due to that. And I'll refer to Catherine for any more for that question.
Our overtime is trending a little bit higher than normal and a little bit higher than in previous years. Definitely vacation backfill is one of our highest categories that we're seeing. But as the chief said, we do have a lot of vacancies, so the savings that we're generating from that is keeping our total personal savings on an even keel.
Hello. I had a couple of questions. One thing that I noticed was that the CBO mentioned that instead of, you had a section in the budget where you were making cuts or saying that you would cut these to allow these other things to be added, and you had not, you had picked certain positions that perhaps you would cut if you had to. But they suggested considering the school officers. Is there any possibility that the school officers would be cut this year?
Can I just,
sorry for
just
the
before
long
you answer, Chief, I just want
up,
to jump in.
Yeah,
we didn't actually recommend cutting the school officers, but we did say that there's a potential revenue there. Again, just for history, the schools used to pay for their own police officers up until 2001. At that time, the school district was facing some budget cuts of their own. The city stepped in. We've picked up that cost ever since. And so one of the questions we put on the table, though, is that an in perpetuity thing, or is there an opportunity there for the schools to again start paying for the police officers that are stationed in the schools?
I just noticed their name, and I just wanted to emphasize how important they are. Yeah. And then I also wanted to ask a question about the body camera. I noticed that there's like $500,000 going to be spent on body cameras this year. Is that correct? That's an ask that you're making.
The ask that we have is for the support personnel to help build the policy and get that program going and ready. We have money set aside and earmarked for some of the equipment. And this really be a question around timing, because right now there's a couple things that need to be fixed legislatively for body cameras to work for us. That's going on right now down in Salem. I was down last week regarding that. And then there's our negotiations with the collective bargaining agreements with the unions around some pieces there. But to go operational with body cameras will require these positions at some point. And our hope in this ask was trying to get on the front end and not kind of be chasing it down the road.
Okay, so I was wondering about that because I've been reading about body cameras, and the first articles about body cameras were so favorable. It was like, oh, this is going to solve everything. And then as time has gone on, they poked a little more into the fact that those studies were very tiny, and they didn't, it's not necessarily going to be the next big thing, or it's not necessarily going to be the thing that's going to solve all the problems that we have in communities where there's anger, et cetera, et cetera. So I was just wondering, have you thought about letting somebody else innovate all that and spend all that money on that and then coming a little later, a little bit farther on the curve? Because a lot of times with technology, if you wait a little bit, it comes in a lot cheaper. So I'm just, you know, wondering if that's a calculation or whether you're so focused on the idea of getting in these cameras that you haven't thought about whether we really need them or not, at least to be the first ones on the block.
I think that's a great question and always a relevant question around technology, because technology seems to change so fast, and what might have cost you a bunch of money, you know, a year later, 2 years later, might cost you a lot less. I really believe that body cameras are going to be the new standard for my profession across the country. I think that you know, the legislative fixes that the profession requires probably will get addressed, I think, in this session. You know, and the things that we're looking at there are around the public records request. So we want this technology as a profession to increase transparency and build trust. But right now, one of the things, because we're really not the first people on the block on this, we've piloted it recently, but some other departments have had it for a little bit of time. And one of the things that we're learning from them is you've got to have things like the legislative fix so people can do a public records request and get, you know, here's your entire footage for what an officer did during the day, and put interviews of, you know, sensitive victim interviews on YouTube. And so there's fixes we need, you know, in place that we've learned from other people already going through that process.
Mm-hmm. But you're still intent on spending the $500,000. You're saying the $500,000 is just to get ready to do the cameras. Is that what you're saying?
No, the ask for the positions in the budget here are the support people for that program.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that legislation is almost certainly going to get passed. The collective bargaining issue pieces almost certainly will get resolved. And so now's the time to be, you know, building our policy, getting our information request processes all lined up, and not waiting. That just defers this from happening down the road. That mm-hmm. that's why that the ask for that now, but also with the caveat, we can push that decision down the road, but that will just cost us time when we could go live with the project.
Just to clarify, the ask is $227,000.
Oh, thank you.
If I could pick up on that thread, sort of overall in terms of the City Budget Office review of the Police Bureau budget, and I'm going to turn it over to Christy here in more detail, but, you know, we do recommend in favor of the DOJ analysts, the six analysts there, and I think, and as well as the revenue offset positions, I'm sorry, as well as the revenue supported positions, and we do recommend against the offsets, although we do put a couple of revenue options on the table for further study. But I do want to sort of let Christy talk a little bit more about the cameras, because we do have some concerns, and again, I don't think it's concerns with the use of cameras, but it is in terms of how this is going to impact sort of the city, the Police Bureau budget and the city overall in terms of ongoing operations.
Thanks, Andrew. So the primary thing with looking at the ongoing support is this request was primarily for the estimated personnel resources and not for the accompanying work that could be associated with records retention, with records storage, and with future equipment replacement. That's the body that agencies that have gone towards body cameras have reported back as saying, we were able to afford the implementation, but it's that ongoing support and then the nature of that support. So depending on what our record retention policies are, how long the information has to be retained and how it is to be managed and then made available would also dictate what level of support is required from both a personnel staffing and an IT support. Without having that information in a more finite level, it's very difficult to recommend to go down the path. The Bureau has indicated that it's going to be going out for an RFP. An RFP would allow the Bureau to probably get a more higher confidence level of what that level of support would be based on the type of camera program that they would be looking to implement. So this kind of felt like the money that the Council has already set aside for an on-person camera program is already set. So the first round they have asked for, it was originally asked for in the fall of 2013. on-person cameras and mobile audio video cameras have been researched and reviewed by the Budget Office for many years, at least starting back to 2008. So we have been looking at the cost and watching how the technology has changed over time. And this is now getting to a point where, as the chief has indicated, it's starting to become more of an accepted practice in law enforcement. But we still want to know what that ongoing cost will be.
And I think some of the cities that have implemented it have seen tremendous ongoing costs in the millions of dollars. And so I think that's what we want to make sure.
Or they get to the point when that bill comes due that it's, okay, now we're not going to do it.
Right. And so I think, you know, in our recommendation, again, if council's committed to the implementation of an on-body, you know, camera program, that, again, using this information from the RFP, return to council with a more firm and complete cost estimate for that entire program. And I think that's really what our concern is.
So I want to first commend you, CBO, for the report and the Police Bureau for the details you've put in. On page 2 of the CBO report, there's a very impressive chart that shows the decrease in use of force over the last 4 years. Even though the calls for service have gone down a little bit, the use of force incidents have gone down a lot at the same time that the arrests have gone up, and that is commendable. So I would like to know if you could get to me at the $4.6 million of ongoing money that was dedicated several years ago for Department of Justice implementation. Could you give me a breakdown as to what that's currently being used for? Then secondly, I think it's time to talk again. The cuts that you put up were cuts in patrol, traffic, gang enforcement, drug and vice, and records. I think it's time to talk about the mounted patrol again. We had the 2-year agreement that we were going to fund the mounted patrol, but that's now been satisfied. And in terms of, is it more important to have Department of Justice analysts versus the mounted patrol, especially when we know that we're going to have a big capital investment to find a new place for the horses to live? I'd like to have that discussion in this session. And I notice we're going to be doing special appropriations later this afternoon, but there are 4 Police Bureau ongoing requests that the mayor put into special appropriations, which really seem more appropriate to discuss under the Police Bureau budget. So as we move forward, as City Budget Office, it would seem to me to be good to have all of our Bureau's requests discussed under the Bureau rather than some of them being put off to special appropriations, especially where there's ongoing money that the rest of us were not able to put requests for ongoing money into our Bureau budgets without an offset. So those, just for those who may be watching at home or who don't have this paper, the Boy Strength Program Coordinator, the Cheers Van, Hooper Detox, and LifeWorks Now. I'm surprised that some of those, I thought that we put Hooper Detox into ongoing last year, no?
It was one time.
It was one time.
Half of it.
Half of it was ongoing, the other half was one time.
So this is a conversion of that. And the same with the LifeWorks Now, I'm pretty sure we put in there. In fact,
half of it. This is the half that is covered by the JAG grant. So half of it is taken care of in ongoing general fund resources. The other half the Bureau has been using JAG grant for.
And we don't think we're going to get the JAG grant in perpetuity?
It has been declining year over year, the amount of money that we get. It's hard to predict. But it's not a definite.
And the Cheers van?
Again, it's been one time for many years. That is a request that has been serial one time for many years.
Okay, and the Boy Strength Program Coordinator, I know we just added that in the bump. However, I would have liked to have seen it in the Bureau's request as a priority along with the Women's Strength Program. I know we battled over my first term to make sure that Women's Strength was fully funded, and I think it's one of the best community outreach and PR strategies that the Bureau has, in addition to the walking patrols and the other things that you do. So I would like to have seen that discussed under the main budget. And then my last question is to ask the Office of Equity and Human Rights for your comments on the police budget, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. I had a couple comments and then questions on just equity in general and the budget tool. And first, I just want to compliment you on the depth by which the Bureau completed this document. And each of the divisions individually did their own assessment related to equity, so I think it was taken very seriously, and I truly appreciate that. A couple questions, Chief. or comment anyway. First comment is in the questions regarding people with disability, all of the answers were related to those with a mental illness, not any physical disability. So I would just call that to your attention and also suggest that the opportunity to hire six analysts and or, you know, non-sworn might provide an opportunity for hiring of people with disability or certainly people of color, but it provides an opportunity there that may not have been considered in the evaluation of the tool. The question on the performance measures, and having gone through this process with my budget analyst, I understand some of the questions and issues. I guess my first comment is some of them could be disaggregated by race, I think, to give us a better indicator. If you look at percentage of PBB arrests that were where there was a use of force, I think, and my guess is you have the information somewhere, but if it's not an indicator, I'm not sure where we're going with it. And then the percentage of residents who feel safe walking alone in the neighborhood at night, I know is a auditor's survey question, I believe. More broadly, given DOJ and other things, I didn't see an indicator here specifically related to how communities feel in general about interactions with the police. And I'm not sure how to capture that question or where it would go, but I mean, I think that would be an indicator that would make, be more very specific about some of the things that are currently issues related to police and community at this point.
I think that's great. We actually had a lot of discussion. That's what I kind of tried to capture at the end when I was talking about our performance measures because of the focus of our work. But now how do we get an accurate performance measure around that and wrestling with that, and at the end, you know, kind of coming to the default conclusion and being hopeful that accomplishing, you know, the different objectives to the COCAL standard and the COAB standard would help get us there. But I share your observation of that, and you know, we're, you know, trying to figure out the best way to better measure exactly that, because that's where so much of our effort is going, and I want us to accurately be able to see are we being successful.
Mm-hmm. Great, thank you. And one final thing, if I may, in talking about the body cameras, I think, as you said, there are other places, other entities that have begun to use this. I think it's an opportunity, again, talking about the larger, some of the larger issues community related, to evaluate the equity strategy in the use of the body cameras and or the equity ramifications of their usage and what has been seen, if anything, so far as indicators or what analysis may have been done or not, but I think it's an opportunity to look at larger systemic, some of the systemic questions that are going on that may be able to be addressed and or just addressed regarding the body cameras and how can they tell a different story or tell a story in general that may alleviate some of the issues and or shine a light on some of the issues. I don't know, but I think there's an opportunity there for an analysis of that.
I agree with that part, and that has really been coming into light in some of the conversations we've been having of late. We put a release out, an electronic site for people to start giving community feedback to their thoughts on body cameras. Should we have them? Shouldn't we? And every issue in between, as well as an internal one. And we're hearing a lot of feedback around that really is helping us to have that kind of conversation. We're looking at doing several community forums for that discussion, and probably the first one is going to be next month on the east side of town.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. That's all I have.
Chief, to follow up on Commissioner Fritz's question about the Mounted Patrol, historically, when the Bureau has been asked for cuts, the Mounted Patrol has been one of the first things on the list. So I was actually kind of surprised to see that in suggesting offsets, you were talking about precinct patrol and traffic and gang enforcement folks, as opposed to suggesting the Mounted Patrol. So I was curious as to your explanation for why one thing and not the other.
Yeah, one of the things that I mentioned, because that comes up every time, and that's one of those things that almost seems to have become kind of a sacred cow. We see, you know, tremendous community feedback and support whenever there's discussion of Mounted Patrol being on the table and being cut, rather than realistically what makes the most sense to the police bureau that they're really willing to cut if we have to take the cuts to make this. And it seems like, you know, Mounted Patrol has been one of those things that has generated a lot of drama around that cut piece. And so that's why you're not seeing it there. It's one of the things that I've heard loud and clear from the community downtown that that is something that they desire and support. We hear from the community and the Friends of Mountain Patrol, their support is so much that they contribute significant amounts of money to support that program.
Chief, I realize there's a vocal group of supporters of the Mounted Patrol, but also when Channel 2 did a poll 2 years ago asking what would you be willing to see cut to balance the city budget, the only service that got a majority saying, yes, we're willing to cut it, was the Mounted Patrol. So I think the community support is strong but not wide. And the question I have for you is simply, if it were totally up to you and you didn't have to worry about, you know, community response, et cetera, if you had a choice between cutting the Mounted Patrol and cutting precinct patrol officers and traffic officers and gang enforcement officers, which would you pick?
Well, you know, for me, it comes back to, you know, my focus and looking at, you know, what does the community want? You have to look at, I think, the different segments of the community. You know, I think if we did a survey community-wide, there might be less support for having a walking beat, downtown walking beat in Hawthorne, but we know from last year the impact that had on that community and the desire to have that work. So I think it's important in my role to look at all segments of the community and try to best meet their desires. And in doing that, because I've heard so loud and clear what the downtown community wants in support of the MPU, that's why my cuts are what they are, that realistically that's what I would cut to gain these analyst positions that I need.
Can I just follow up on that one? What is the plan for the new stable?
That's something that has been a much more recent development, and the mayor has been at the front of that, and I wish he was here to better comment on our progress around that.
So if we could get that as part of this budget discussion, because if it's, you know, I know we put a budget note in the PDC budget last year saying that they are not allowed to go spend, I think it was $2 million they had earmarked for it without coming back to council. That's a significant capital investment at the time that we're looking at how we're going to pay for the Portland building, how we're going to fix community center roofs, et cetera. So I think that's, if we can't house the horses, then maybe that decision gets made by default, even though we recognize that there's a lot of people who like it.
So just to maybe wrap up the Mounted Patrol, there was a commitment by the Friends of Mounted Patrol to raise, I believe it was $400,000 a year. Has that, $200,000 a year? Okay. Is that?
I believe it was $200,000.
Okay. Has that been achieved or this year and last year?
We were given $200,000 last year, and we anticipate getting $200,000 this coming year.
And is that an ongoing commitment? Or
no, it was a two-year commitment.
So it was 2 years. I thought it was four. Okay. So this is the time to take a look at that.
On that issue, though, Catherine, the $200,000 that came last year, was it for operations of the MPU, or is it being set aside for something else?
It was initially supposed to be for operations, and since we were talking about trying to find a new place for the horses, they asked that it be set aside for possibly use in developing a capital plan.
Okay. The walking patrols, what's the plan to, I mean, I know they've been wildly successful in Old Town and wildly successful in Hawthorne. Are there plans to roll them out in other areas in this budget?
One of the things that we are doing, we're piloting downtown and Central Precinct right now for the next 6 months, is changing from a district model of staffing to a sector model of staffing. So instead of having 20 or 25 districts, having four or five geographic areas and teams working in that to better manage that workload. What we're trying to achieve out of that is using our personnel more efficiently and being able to have, you know, some people where it's appropriate, like downtown in Hawthorne, out on foot doing walking patrols, and the rest of that team managing that district themselves. So we're piloting how can we have the success of what that part of the community needs and do it on a cost-neutral basis. And then we're having conversations in the community. How do they want to be policed? What's the best way? Some of it's foot patrol, some of it's not. Some of it's bicycles, and, again, some of it's horses.
And then my final question was, is there anything new under the sun in terms of trying to recruit more diverse officers for the police bureau? I mean, I know we've tried lots of things over the years.
We have, and we've been pretty successful the last several years, and we're continue to commit to that and have a strong focus on that. Our current three strategies that we're spending time on are a partnership with Portland Community College and a looking at a different way, focusing on people who are retiring from the military as another strategy. And then our third strategy is a focus on looking at our cadet program and building a better pipeline of cadets and a pathway into the Portland Police Bureau. I've joined and just become a board member in All Hands Raise, which is a partnership in the city for having folks complete high school, get some college, and get a job in the city. We're looking at that piece. One of the things that we know, we've been largely successful in the last several years from recruiting from out of state, in California in particular, because the economy was bad. In California, you've got the ability to put yourself through the police academy. In Oregon, a department has to put you through. With the downturn in the economy several years back, there was a lot of folks that either a department was putting them through the academy or they were putting themselves through the academy with the expectation of a law enforcement job, and those were going away. So we were able to recruit and pull people away, and that's harder to do, particularly when you're recruiting minorities, because you're pulling away from families, support systems, and you're recruiting them to a very white city. And so I put some of that success really as, and not to diminish the work, but that's a little bit of an artificial success that model won't continue to sustain us. And we need to look very much at Portland-specific strategies to continue the success with that priority of ours.
Just a quick follow-up on that. Is having people put themselves through the police academy something that we've ever looked at? And is there a compelling reason for us not to follow that California model and allow people to maybe do that?
Yeah, that decision would be made by the Department of Public Standards and Training in Salem. I've never heard that discussion, and I think California is a little bit of a standout in the ability to do that. But I haven't heard that discussion at all in Salem prior.
So I had one other question that was actually more related to what the chart at the top of page 4 and the offset that you guys did, the six positions, which is, I noticed that you made the case that you're backfilling sworn officers into basically non-sworn duties as a result of cutbacks of non-sworn over the last few years. And of the six in the non-CBO recommended offset, how many of those are sworn positions? The six positions that were in the offset on page six here?
In the offset positions for those six analysts,
yeah.
Five of those are sworn positions,
so,
and one is a non-sworn.
In the past, sort of cutting non-sworn positions or eliminating sworn positions was something that was avoided because of the associated training costs and all that other stuff.
When our staffing levels really start getting down to as low as they are, the value of a sworn person is they can do that job and they can come out and also help you with overtime. They can also come out and help you with larger needs like protests or the Occupy events that you have where you have a need beyond what people are doing in their day jobs to do other work. But they can support and help with other overtime that a non-sworn can't. In a perfect world, you want to be staffed adequately for your sworn needs and have your non-sworn positions. Typically, many of those have less costs associated with them, less because of different collective bargaining agreements. So they can be more affordable, but they also don't give you the option of doing other stuff besides that job you've hired them for.
I guess that I understand that logic completely, and that's why I was surprised to see so many sworn positions, or what I thought were, and you just confirmed were sworn positions in, among those offset cuts. But I understand that if you're really running at a sort of a skeleton crew for the non-sworn positions, you may have felt like you had to cut sworn positions in order to get there.
Yeah, we've had a lot of cuts over the years for a lot of different reasons. And we're really at our bare bones. There's no more non-sworn positions to give, and given the sworn positions, it's only because I know I have the ability, at least on a limited basis, to do some of that work on an overtime basis.
Chief, I have one question on the chart that describes people feeling comfortable or safe walking in their neighborhoods at night. If 38% don't feel comfortable walking around, is it because, in fact, there's greater crime in the neighborhood, or is it a perceived that there's more crime? And is there a response as far as increased patrols if, in fact, people feel less comfortable and, in fact, there's more crime? I don't know. It's pretty complicated what I just said.
Nope, and I think I can answer that. One of the things that we found the summer before last, we had, and why we did things very different last summer downtown, both downtown and at Hawthorne, there were a couple high-profile incidents, but I had never seen a time like this downtown where so many people were just genuinely afraid that they were going to be a victim of crime. The crime numbers didn't support that, but the feeling was widespread. It was with people that would come downtown. It was people that worked downtown. It was even amongst homeless folks who have much higher comfort level were genuinely afraid of being the victim of violent crime. And so we looked at what are we going to do different last summer compared to the summer before. And by having that foot patrol officers out of that car, both that visibility and that conversation across the board, it completely changed that fear of crime. The crime numbers didn't change. The crime numbers stayed steady, but the fear of crime plummeted. And it wasn't because of any huge increases in arrests. It was simply a visibility of officers around, walking around, talking with everybody.
Thank you.
I'd like to comment on that too, though, because I always write no on that one, but it's not because of the crime in the neighborhood. It's because we don't have sidewalks and streetlights in Southwest Portland. And actually, so I think that there's also that factor, especially since it's also the areas that we did a study of the Ranger program in parks, which we presented to council a couple of weeks ago, and folks feel much less safe in the parks in East Portland than they do in other parks. Part of the reason is we don't have Ranger service there. So I think that we were able to tease out a little bit how much of it is due to inadequate street infrastructure and how much of it is due to crime issues.
Commissioner, do you have an example that you have a park where people did feel uncomfortable, you put the lights in and all of a sudden they feel much better?
And I appreciate your supporting my budget request.
A really big picture question, which is, crime is down by, I think, over 30% over the past 20 years. And the Bureau, I think, is about the same size, maybe 2 or 3 percentage points smaller. But the number of calls isn't down, and you tell me that people still feel plenty busy. And I'm curious as to your perspective on what's made up the difference. I mean, I can think of at least 3 possible explanations. You could probably offer others. One possible explanation is that no police force spends all that much of its time dealing with actual crime. So a decline in the actual amount of crime doesn't have a big impact on your resource availability. Another possible explanation is that people are making calls now for things they would never have made calls about 20 years ago. There's like new stuff people call the police for, so that takes up the slack. And a third possibility is that 20 years ago, you got calls that are the same kind of calls you're getting now, a chunk of them, that 20 years ago you just said, sorry, we're not taking that call, but now since you got more time, you do. And I'm just curious as to how you think the slack has been taken up in those 3 different ways, or are there other ways you could identify?
I think that is a great observation. I think I see a lot of what you've talked about in that time frame. When I started the job in 1986, very, very different job. I mean, the job posting was law enforcement officer. And so you went on a call, if it wasn't about violating the law, your response was very limited and you generally move on to the next thing. Our basic police academy was 8 weeks long. And you fast forward now, 29 years later, very, very different. And, the police academy is now 16 weeks long, reflecting how different that is. In that time frame, a lot has happened. Technology has happened, changed the job quite a bit. The behavioral health system has changed very much from when I started, and people that have been historically institutionalized or treated are now out on the street and generating different kind of calls. And those type of calls take a lot more time. And so you're still seeing a call, but that call, instead of, you know, being a typical violation of a law that might result, all right, an arrest, going to jail, over in a relatively short number of time now, that call is generated into generally multiple officers taking significant amount of time to make sure that person, you may start with a negotiation and ultimately be able to maybe safely take them into custody and then connecting them with the right resources. So those types of calls now, these non-crime calls, these livability issue type of calls, may also take significantly more time than just a typical criminal violation might.
I asked Chief Reese once what percentage of calls wind up having something to do with a behavioral health issue. And I think he told me his guess was 5 to 7%. Is that true? Do you think it's higher? Do you think that might be true of the number of calls, but the amount of time is higher?
One of the things that we're doing with our new computer system is trying to answer that question very much. So we're putting what we call disposition codes in our calls, so that the officer can click, did this have a component of that to it, so that we can better track that. I think the numbers that we have now are higher than the 5 to 7%. I remember whenever you go out and work a shift, it feels like about, you know, close to every other call. I remember the gut feeling was always about 40%. I think the real number's a little bit less than that. But because we really want to answer that question and figure out exactly what we're working with, we're making changes to our computer system to track that and get that answer.
And congratulations on helping the person on the interstate bridge yesterday. That was really great to see that good outcome. I just have one follow-up question about the non-sworn folks. We had a discussion last year or the year before about cutting the fingerprint department. What happened with that?
Yeah, that's part of one of the things that the mayor has been doing is looking at what does the city pay for, what does the county pay for, and who should be paying for what. And that has been part of his conversations with the county. The folks who do the fingerprinting are city employees, and some of that work, a big chunk of that work, is done in the correctional facility. And the conversation really revolves around we could do it that way, or we could do it where the Bureau is charged for fingerprinting every time we bring somebody in. And kind of the short answer is the cost would be about the same, since we're about 85% of who gets booked into the jail. And so what we're able to do by maintaining still doing that function is get very high quality fingerprints that help us with our follow-up investigations.
And so we've put that to rest, and that's what we're going to keep doing from
here. I don't know if that's the final answer, because I know those conversations have been ongoing with the mayor, but I think that was the last conversation, to my understanding.
Well, I was certainly persuaded by the staff who came to talk to me and my understanding of that, so thank you very much. I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you very much, Chief.
Wait, I had one more giant thing. Okay. Sorry. So, in reading the report, I was looking for signs that you guys had been examining what had been going on in Colorado and Washington, because there is going to be some impact on your duties here as a result of the law change. And I was just wondering if you guys have looked at the fiscal implications of that, and if we might expect to see that reflected, if not in this year's budget, in future budgets.
We have, and we're working on, and we're hopeful to actually maybe even get to the point of being able to put an FTE account to that. Look in particular in Washington, the changes that they had once marijuana started being up there, and the increases in vehicle accidents that they required. One of the challenges we know we have is the ability to process an impaired driving from marijuana case much, much harder than a drunk driving case. We train all of our officers how to operate the intoxilizer, how to process those arrests. The qualifications for what's called the DRE, drug recognition expert, are much, much higher. It's a very difficult school. It's 2 weeks long, and it requires annual recertification. But we do think, and we've got our traffic division captain working on trying to put what changes did they experience, and maybe even be able to put kind of an FTE count to that. That was one of those second-tier pieces that I mentioned that in our budget, you know, doesn't include, you know, our impact on traffic, both for that and our loss of night shift.